Okay. Have you ever participated in any kind of demonstration or march or any on any issue that you believe in? And what was the issue and why was it important enough that you marched?
I was only in one demonstration that I can remember, and it was an issue that was really of no consequence. It was just being young and stupid. When I lived in Haight-Ashbury, the police started doing sweeps of the street, of Haight Street, very frequently, and always asking you for ID and making you get off the street. So I think one summer when there were a lot of riots going on at different colleges, probably summer of 68, first summer I was there, we had started out with passive civil disobedience, doing sit-ins and storefronts and things like that, and it kept getting to be an aggravated situation, and we had several organized demonstrations, and they ended in sort of a violent confrontation between the police, and they were chasing us down streets and alleys. But it was really silly. It was more of a game of something to do, I think, than anything. It was not for any particular cause. When I do environmental activism now, it takes more the form of a lot of letter writing or going down to the legislature in Montgomery and talking with legislators, either a group or one-on-one. It's a lot more diplomatic. The channels I use now are more diplomatic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say you usually take the form of writing letters and stuff to legislators now. Have you ever written to the president? And if so, what was it about? And what do you usually write in your letters?
Well, I've written to George Bush. And I've written to Clinton and Gore. And not that it probably really means all that much to them. But, you know, always makes the writer glad to get something off their chest. But I've written to all the Alabama congressional delegation and just about all the Alabama legislators, giving them my views on environmental issues, usually specific issues that I feel are important. For instance, writing to President Bush, I was with a group of people that were doing some work on a wilderness in Alaska, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, where there may be 6 months worth of oil in the ground, and it's the last pristine refuge on the North American continent. And there's oil companies that want to develop it.
Of course.
And having seen films of Prudhoe Bay and seeing what went on the Exxon Valdez and all these other situations, there's a lot of people who feel it's better left alone. Mm-hmm. It's not worth trading a birthright of pristine wilderness and also a way of life for Eskimo Indian tribe who lives up there. It's not worth trading those birthrights for 6 months worth of crude oil. It's ridiculous. And so I've written him letters about that, and I've written Clinton and Gore about a lot of general environmental things. And so it's, you know, I get replies. Sometimes it's like a standard form letter. Sometimes it has a few things written at the bottom. A lot of times I've noticed the Alabama congressional delegation, particularly Richard Shelby, will take what you say and try to twist it around and act like you're supporting what you're telling them you're not supporting. And then you have to send them a follow-up letter and say, wait a minute, did you read what I wrote you? So
your responses were kind of a mixed bag of stuff between form letters that they just either signed or stamped, or something that was completely against what you were writing for to start with?
Well, actually, the ones that twist around what I'm saying to them, I believe, are the ones that they're actually taking some time to read my letter and write their letter, or one of their aides is writing. Mm-hmm. It's an individualized letter because my husband and I are flagged in a lot of these congressional offices. There's a flagging system in a lot of lawmakers' offices, and when certain people's names come through, they pull those letters and they have either one of the higher ranking aides or the lawmaker themselves read it and respond to it. because they know that those people are rabble rousers. So that happens, especially with Senator Shelby on this endangered species issue.
Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel?
In a way, it's good because you know they're reading what you say, but then in a way it makes you angry because they twist it around, especially Shelby, and try to say, well, I appreciate your support on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the closing statement. It's sort of like corkscrewing what you said, and you know that you've got to follow it up. You can't just leave it at that.
Just from your lifetime, who do you think has influenced the environment the most, politician-wise, in a negative or positive sense?
Positively, I would say, in this country anyway, Jimmy Carter has been the best influence, and we got the best legislation passed while he was president. Negatively, it's hard to say whether Reagan or Bush were the worst influences. Of course, they galvanized a lot of the environmental movement. You know, they caused a lot of environmentalists to unite against them. And in that sense, we were able to raise the awareness of the country even more because we got attention from the media. Because whenever you're coming back at the establishment about something, you always get media attention.
Do you think that because of what he's done after office, Carter's the best, or is it strictly the legislation that he's passed when he was in office?
Well, it's both. It's both. I think history's going to look back on him as one of the more important, more effective presidents. For instance, the EPA was gotten together under Nixon, and that was real important. That was a very important thing to happen. But then Carter went on to develop a lot of potential there. One of the most important things he did was to help get the Resource Recovery and Reclamation Act passed, which started us slowly on the road to recycling and resource reuse and led to a lot of other environmental protection laws.
I've heard it said that the EPA is only as strong as the president in office allows it to be or wants it to be. Do you think Clinton's given it enough strength now, or what do you think about his actions thus far?
Well, I'd like to see him step out and do more environmental work. I believe, from what I understand, from what I read, that Gore and Babbitt and other folks in high office are working on some very comprehensive plans.
Mm-hmm.
And the Clinton administration is sort of having to tackle one monster at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they've got health reform on the front burner, welfare reform right after that, and then I believe they're going to be coming out with an environmental package that's going to be very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be very important, very effective.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just have to see what happens. I just hope that the partisan fever in Washington will calm down, because we'll never get anything done if it's just going to be, you know, a contest between Republicans and Democrats, and nobody's thinking of what's best for the country.
That's right.
But I would like to see more and better stuff come out with the administration. I wasn't real pleased with what's going on with the old-growth forest, although it's better than under Bush. And I wasn't real pleased with what happened with the Bureau of Land Management, with grazing and mining. But I'm understanding that they're going back in for strengthening all that stuff and raising the grazing fees and making the miners reclaim areas. Essentially, we've got, I don't know if you know about that, but we have Bureau of Land Management. We have millions of acres of public land. And they're allowing cattlemen to send their livestock in there and just graze for very little, just pitiful amounts of money. And then mining companies are allowed to go in and strip our public lands and just leave them there for very little money.
Mm-hmm. Without any kind of recovery plan for them?
Right.
Just leave them completely open or whatever?
Right now, from what I understand, there's a token recovery plan, but it's very ineffective.
Well, what do you think about our society being being as it is now, what do you think we should strive towards? Or can you give an ideal place or what you would like America to be like as a haven or whatever for environmentalism? Is there any one thing that you think we should strive towards, any place?
Well, there's really two major areas that we need to work on, and it's, you can't work on one without working on the other. One is, of course, population. We've got to deal with population problems, and that's not only in this country, but worldwide. But it's coming to haunt this country, too. And, of course, along with population, there's a social balance type of thing, that you've got to work for what you get, and you've got to be willing to support your children that you have, and such as that. But on the other hand, there's a lot of environmental technologies that I think we need to work toward improving recycling technologies and solar technologies and a lot of other types of waste disposal, waste recycling as far as hazardous waste goes, and energy technologies. Those are real important things, and I think that in developing those, the government has got to come out with tax credits for people who work on those, and has got to give some incentives to businesses to work on that. Plus, we're going to have laws about agencies recycling and buying recycled products, government agencies. So, for years, the government has been subsidizing agriculture and oil and steel, and why not work to subsidize something that's good for not only for the economy but for the environment, which those two are married forever, and you can't really separate the economy from the environment. You can't say, well, we can't do this for the environment because it's bad for the economy. That's very short-sighted. When you get past that point, you realize that if you don't have an environment, you don't have an economy. So what's the point?